From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 12th day of March 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll hear some thoughts from University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good about what might happen if the corn crop comes up short this season. In agricultural news, pricing and competition are center stage at an Iowa conference on livestock. The president has ordered federal agencies to look for export promotion opportunities, and there's a call for new wheat grading standards to be developed. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the March wheat at 487.75 was up 5.25. That in Kansas City, July there at 505.5, up 5.25. In the soft red from Chicago, 472.25. The settlement price up 3.75. July at 498, up 6.5 cents. March corn futures 354, penning a half lower. May at 364.25, down 1. July at 375.5, 3/4 lower. September corn at 384.25, down a penny and a quarter. And December futures for the day at 393.75, down 1.5 cents. March soybean futures $9.26, up a half today. May down 5 cents at 925.5. July at 933.5, 5.5 lower. August contract at 933, down 4.75, and September soybeans at 922, down 3.5 cents. The November contract in the bean pit finished the day at 914, down 2.5 cents. From the products, bean meal futures March contract 251.20, up $1.60. The May down $1.30 at 251.30. March oil at 39.05, 77 lower. The May down 56 at 39.55. April live cattle $95.10. $1.27.5 higher. June at 92.80, up 85 cents. March feeders at 103, $1.07.5 higher, and the April 87.5 cents higher at $105.97. Lean hogs at 72.65, 77.5 higher, and the May futures at 77.95, up 70 cents on the day. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $81.24 a barrel. They finished down 87 cents. The May at 81.54, down 89. April ethanol at $1.58.5, a penny and 9 tenths lower. Natural gas at 4.39 and 4 tenths, down 4 and 6 tenths. The RBOB at 2.25 and 7 tenths, up 1 and 4 tenths. And the heating oil or diesel fuel, a penny and 9 cents lower, $2.09.5. Gold contract finished at $1,101.50. That's down $6.50 in the March. And the Dow at 10,617 is up about 5 points at this hour. U.S. dollar at 79.84 is down 0.48. And the CRB index at 273.35 is down 0.04 in the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from our own Mike Sola. He says tonight, cloudy with widespread rain across the two-state region, Illinois and Indiana. Highs will range from 44 near Lake Michigan to 51 in the southeastern parts of Indiana. The extended forecast says rain will return to the southern part of Indiana and Illinois and Indiana and spread northward into central sections. That'll happen throughout the day today. Rain will be widespread over Illinois and Indiana tonight and tomorrow. Many locations will pick up over half an inch of rain. Some will receive more than an inch. Scattered showers will continue Saturday night into Sunday, with coverage gradually decreasing. Mostly dry, seasonable weather is expected rather next week. The next chance of rain probably not coming until Friday. We'll talk more about the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. Steve Hilberg will join us from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You are listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On a Friday afternoon, time to check the agricultural futures markets. Mike Zuzulo is with us from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello there, Todd.
It's not a beautiful day here. It's gray and rainy, and I suspect you have the same, and farmers are feeling kind of the same way today, aren't they?
I think they are. You know, the cash price in a lot of regions in our listing area went below 350, and I think that really hurts psychologically. I think the other thing that hurts psychologically is that it's not so much that the prices for the week this week ended that bad, Todd. It's that the perception was that the USDA was going to confirm, again, like January, confirm some crop production problems, and they didn't do that. And essentially, if they did, they did it in such a minute way that in the case of corn and in the case of wheat especially, weaker demand more than offset any supply cuts. And I think that in the cash price in the corn market right now has really left a lot of producers very, very disappointed. And I'll say I'm disappointed as well, but I know I can't fight City Hall any longer, so to speak, when it comes to the USDA numbers, because there's just not a lot of information from USDA that's going to come out between now and the March acreage report, you know, on the 31st. So we got to get down to bare-knuckle marketing at this point.
You're not hopeful that the North and South Dakota will just plummet and it can't go that much?
I've been riding that bull for about 4 months, and as the old-timers used to say, that dog just won't hunt anymore.
Well, that's what happens from time to time. USDA is right, and that's where they're going to land this time around, so we'll have to deal with that. So what do you do now? What do you do about old crop in particular, especially if you've got cash prices that are under 350? You're probably awfully worried if you're a producer and you have a bin full of corn. Maybe that can stay in condition through, I don't know, June, but more likely than not cannot. How quickly do you think to pull the trigger on it?
Quality is the top issue for me as well when it comes to the marketing side, because I think guys with good quality corn can probably see basis improvement through the spring and into early summer. I think we're lining out that way at this point.
Yeah, but seeing basis improvement and marketing sometimes are two different things when we're down at this bottom end. Is it going to be worthwhile, do you think, to hold on to it?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think that if you have good quality corn, it may be worthwhile holding on to and leaving your basis open. But I think that the second thing that attaches right to that is you cannot take out the February lows, the February 4th lows, next week at this stage, in my view. So if you do take those out, I think you really have to do either a hedge to arrive or come in with some type of short futures position or paper position of some sort that protects your downside in the paper market and the futures side, and write that good quality corn into the springtime expecting basis appreciation. Unfortunately, that's probably, I would guess, 25-30% of the people that are listening that have good quality corn. I'm guessing 65-70% are more worried about their quality as time goes on. And in that sense, you have to fight both basis and futures if you lose the chart technicals. So my first and foremost thing that I'm going to be working on with producers at this point is they should have about 20-30% of their old crop corn left based upon the recommendations I've put out here the last few months. If they still have that, then we're going to have to work very hard between now and the end of the month to get some more crop moved on the idea that either the dollar is going to break, and I'm watching the dollar index and that 79.50 level, that would stimulate a sell signal in the dollar that I think would help, and also watch the weather. And if you hear what I'm saying and what I'm watching, unfortunately, this week's report put us into the issue that we can't rely so much upon micro fundamentals. We're going to have to rely upon weather and the outside markets to get a short covering rallies, and we're going to have to use those rallies wisely.
Okay, so producers are going to look right back at you, Mike, and they'll say, oh, weather, that's a good thing for me, because the weather is going to have to be perfect if I'm going to get into the field, because there's so much field work left to be done, and it's going to have to be dry in particular. There's so many corn stalks out there, and Emerson Nafziger, agronomist here, wrote about this yesterday, and it should come out on release in the next couple of days, that a whole lot of the Midwest is going to stay wet really for a very long time, even under dry conditions, because it's got such good cover. The corn crop came off late, the corn stalks didn't get worked at all, and those are in good condition, and they're just a big wet blanket out there, I suppose, over the top of this soil. And producers are wondering if that will have an impact at some point.
Yeah, and I think that's all very good knowledge, and I think that's very useful. I think what I'm trying to get at is that that will be priced in my opinion, into the futures market in the next 20 days going into the acreage report. And if it's not priced in, then I'm guessing that we don't have a lot of weather issues to price in. I mean, I think that the Chicago trader is going to be much more seriously friendly to corn if he sees colder weather versus drier weather at this point, or versus wetter weather at this point. I think the coldness of the weather is probably what the Chicago trader is looking at. So what I'm looking at here, Todd, is 20 days from now, the next 20 days, if we have these short covering rallies on weather, on the dollar, on any other outside market influence, market that in the old crop. You know, keep in mind we're talking about the 09.
Right.
I'm not talking about 2010 right yet as far as really pushing hedges. In fact, I think the report set us up for the corn to work the bear spreads. And if the South Americans continue to have problems getting their beans out, the report set us up so that the bull spread works more or less in the beans. And that's kind of how I'm going to, you know, recommend marketing, be more aggressive on the old crop corn, less aggressive on old crop beans.
Okay, and then for new crop, take both of them up for me.
Well, I would still love to get back up to that 412 level in December corn and get some catch-up sales made. If we've gone below 398 here in the December futures on a weekly close, so I've got to pull a 10% trigger based upon my own timeline here between now and the end of the week next week. So I am going to pull a 10% trigger on new crop, regardless of what the weather says. I hope it's on the upside. For new crop beans, the exact same thing. We've gone below 918. On a closing weekly basis, I've got to do another 10% increment unless we're back up above that level Monday. So the thing about the beans that gets trickier and trickier is the South American weather opens up, and if we stay wetter, I think we're naturally trending towards bigger bean acres anyway, because USDA set the mark and set the bar so low at 77 million.
Okay, so on corn, you're pulling the trigger below the insurance level, but only on 10%. Do you want producers to think about that as their unprotected bushels that they're going to market at this point?
It's a good question. I hadn't really thought of that. I think what I'm going after is a mindset that the calendar is working against me if we get it planted. As soon as we get the new seed bed laid and we get the crop up, then we're probably due for another leg lower in all the commodities. And with the idea that wheat is going to be a very, very tough nut on the corn this year, that it's going to weigh heavily on the corn all year long unless we have some weather surprises there. So my mindset is to get the early hedges in place before the end of this month and then anticipate that May-June low. And if I've got some price sales made at below break-even or below that crop insurance price, then I'll look at defending that. But if I can sell, the higher I sell now and the closer I am to profit, if I'm right and the market goes down in the middle part of the year, then I can use a combination of the crop insurance, October payout, and reownership on the board to protect me whichever way the market goes into fall.
Okay. Anything else that we need to take up before I let you go?
I think I've done enough to you.
Well, you know what? What we haven't talked about really, livestock and wheat. We talked about wheat a little bit, but a short crop for soft red, but just an awfully big crop out there otherwise, I think, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, and it seems like from based upon the Southern Plains producers I work with, the crop's coming around real nicely. I talked to a couple in particular this week that said, I'm not real worried about coming out of dormancy as far as hard red. I'm worried about later on in case we go hot, cold, and we see some heaving and the crop starts to weaken, you know, in that May-June time period. So I don't see a lot of negativity as far as the crop, you know, crop prospects, the negative crop prospects here at this point for the wheat. And as far as the soft red goes, I think that's going to be more of an acreage issue at the end of the month.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Mike had to say again, you can do it on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Not only will you find Mike there today, but you'll find all the rest of our ag programming, including an update from the midday case and the pre-opening and opening market report, a way to sign up for our weekend newsletter as well. It's all at WILLAG.org. If you can't get to our website, how about dialing the phone number and listening to a voicemail? We update it at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. The number to call is 217-333-3434. That's 217-333-3434. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all the ag news for the afternoon.
Support for the closing market report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, pricing and competition issues are center stage today in Anarchy, Iowa, where the White House has dispatched Attorney General Eric Holder to speak at the first of several workshops on the pork, beef, dairy, and poultry industries. Other key officials speaking will include Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and Assistant Attorney General Christine Varney, whose specialty is antitrust issues. In advance of today's workshop, Senate Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Saxby Chambliss and Committee Member Pat Roberts wrote to both Vilsack and Holder to urge the administration to take a balanced view of the situation. The two Republicans also noted their own concerns about unintended consequences of government intervention in the marketplace. President Barack Obama is ordering federal agencies to zero in on export promotion, expanding trade finance opportunities for small and medium-sized businesses, and moving to overhaul an outdated export control system. Obama will sketch those and other trade moves, part of a broader effort the White House says will support 2 million new jobs, in a speech at the Export-Import Bank's annual conference. Obama will also renew his call for China to move to a more market-based currency as part of the Group of 20's drive to rebalance the world economy. Bakers, millers, and grain exporters are urging the U.S. government today to revise its rules for wheat grading and classification in a bid to encourage production of a struggling variety and attract foreign buyers. USDA asked industry members for comments about the wheat standards in an attempt to keep the standards relevant after changes in technology, breeding, and marketing practices. Some industry members say USDA should improve tests for qualities that are important to bakers, such as protein, gluten content, and dough development. Industry members also suggested changes to the amount of hard red winter wheat that can be mixed with hard white wheat without resulting in a lower grade due to cross-contamination. Russia on Thursday approved the resumption of imports from 11 U.S. pork plants after assurances that U.S. meat would be free of an antibiotic that violated Russia's food safety rules. Smithfield Foods, the largest U.S. pork producer, confirmed that Russia would resume imports from its plant at Tar Heel, North Carolina. The news had little impact on hog prices, as Russia may wait for U.S. pork prices to drop before resuming purchases. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week, the second one. You can hear on our website after 6 o'clock this evening. It's at WILLAG.org. Now, up next, a podcast with Daryl Good about the future of a short corn crop. The ag economists at Illinois have been wondering what would happen if the corn crop were to come up short for some reason. Weather's the most likely culprit. U of I's Daryl Good and Scott Irwin sat down and thought about it for a while and have just released a briefing on the subject. Here's Darrell Good.
We had kind of three points in mind when we wrote this piece. One is try to remind folks that we still are vulnerable to some extent to a shortfall in corn production due to adverse weather, since it's been really about 15 years since that's happened on a wide-scale basis here in the U.S. There is some thinking that maybe it can't happen in the future. And we try to reinforce the thought that it probably can. We don't know what year or how severe, but thinking that a shortfall in corn production can occur. Secondly, then we tried to work through alternative supply and demand balance sheets for corn, saying what would that balance sheet look like if we had a shortfall in corn production and no change in policy, and we basically allowed the market to allocate that short crop among various uses. And then thirdly, we said, because we are in a very much different environment now than we have been in the past when we've had shortfalls, because we have such a large mandated use of corn for ethanol, should we maybe put in place some policy alternatives to deal with a corn shortfall, basically looking at the idea of, on a temporary basis, reducing the mandates, reducing the tax incentives for ethanol, relaxing the import tariffs, or actually capping ethanol use on a short-term basis in order to allocate a short corn crop.
The reason, Darrell Good says, he and Scott Irwin started thinking about these alternatives is because they believe, left to its own, a shortfall in corn production would be entirely absorbed by the domestic livestock industry, as it always has been in the past.
Given the financial situation of many of our livestock producers, a short corn crop, high corn prices would really, I think, trigger a pretty large liquidation of livestock numbers.
Under the poor corn crop scenario Good and Irwin developed, domestic feed usage of corn would drop by 16% from the current year. It would be associated with a heavy liquidation of livestock numbers. The question, then, is should policymakers take action now to avoid this eventuality?
Potentially, we should have in place some flexibility in our biofuels mandates that would maybe be a combination, depending on how severe the shortfall is, temporarily reduce the mandates, reduce or eliminate the tax credit, reduce or eliminate the import tariff, and under extreme conditions, maybe even establish a cap on how much corn could be used for ethanol consumption for that marketing year.
You can read the report titled Alternative 2010 Corn Production Scenarios and Policy Implications on the FarmDoc website. The address is www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
We would like to thank these sponsors who helped support the recent WILL 20th Annual All-Day Ag Outlook Meeting and all of our agricultural programs on air and online: Strategic Farm Marketing, Stuart Peterson, ADM, Risk Management Commodities, and Pioneer Seeds. Thank you.
Speaking of the All-Day Ag Outlook Meeting, you can find it online on our website at willag.org. It's a little tough to find, but here you go. On the right-hand side of the page, when you hit willag.org, look in the blue section over there on the right-hand side of the page. Scroll down, and you will find it as one of the links. Look for the All-Day Ag Outlook under Ag Programming. It's on the right-hand side of the page at willag.org. Back in 2 minutes when we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Illinois primary voters would no longer pick their candidates for governor and lieutenant governor separately under a bill that passed the Illinois House overwhelmingly today. Under the bill, each gubernatorial candidate would pick a running mate and primary voters would choose or reject them as a team. The bill now goes to the state Senate. It comes after Illinois Democrats were embarrassed in last month's primary election by lieutenant governor nominee Scott Lee Cohen, who was pressured to drop out of the race due to his past arrest on domestic violence charges. Illinois Democrats have received about 175 applications from people who want to replace Cohen as the party's lieutenant governor candidate. And one of the applicants is from East Central Illinois. Conrad Heisner, a retired minister from rural Atwood in Piatt County, says he's never gotten involved in politics before, but he's offering his services just the same. Heisner says he'd like to see the lieutenant governor's office either strengthened or eliminated altogether. U of I and Urbana police are investigating a reported sexual assault that took place in the campus town area overnight. The victim says she was walking home near the area of Goodwin and Nevada in Urbana when she was tapped on the shoulder by a man who forced her behind a nearby building, sexually assaulted her, and then fled. Police are looking for a muscular black male with a tattoo on his left arm. Indiana legislative leaders say they still hope to wrap up the legislative session before Sunday's deadline for adjourning. Democratic House Speaker Patrick Bauer and Republican Senate Leader David Long say their goal is to reach compromises on some key issues, pass them, and end the session today. They still have differences on some issues, including a bill that would delay an unemployment insurance tax increase and provide tax breaks and incentives to create jobs. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. On a Friday afternoon, Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center that belongs to NOAA, located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, joins us. It's cloudy and a bit rainy today, Steve. That's quite a change for the last couple of days, but I suppose more like March than the previous 2 days, I would think.
Yeah, we can get some pretty warm days in March, Todd, but we also get some pretty cold days, and March being the really probably the most transitional of the transition months, we can see wide swings in the weather, and this is not too untypical. But it could have been worse today. I thought it looked like it was going to rain a lot more than it has so far. Looks like the heaviest rain went to the west of Champaign-Urbana a little bit, but it's still a big change from the nice 70s we enjoyed on Wednesday.
Indeed, a high of 47 today. Anything bigger than that in the future?
No, I don't. It looks like we're going to be dealing with this upper low, which is affecting us right now through the weekend. Tomorrow, looks like we're going to have some good rain moving through tonight. Probably move mostly in the northern half of Illinois by most of the day tomorrow. I think looks like the southern half of Illinois be some scattered showers, but not continuous rain. And then some more scattered showers on Sunday as the low is pulling away. And then next week doesn't look all that bad. I think it'll tend to be on the cloudy side. Temperatures. Probably just around or slightly above normal. And then it looks like a potential big change coming up next weekend. We might see a turn to much colder weather. So, as I was saying, we can have some pretty wide swings in March.
A cold with a high involved, so it would be cold and dry or cold and wet?
Potentially, initially cold and wet. I don't want to get too excited at this point because it is a week away, but it looks like there could be some snow coming with this next system next weekend if things hold up. It is a week out, and we'll have to just keep an eye on things.
All right. Well, let's keep an eye on things. I'd just soon not have snow again, but it'll go away quickly if it comes, I suppose, because we're...
What's that?
It'll go away if it comes, I suppose. We're far enough into March.
Yeah, that's the good thing about this time of year. We get snow, and it's usually gone a day or a day and a half.
Yeah, what else do we need to talk about in the weather? Has March been wet or dry? How are we setting up for the planting season? It's still, you know, a month away, but...
Yeah, we had a lot of snow this winter for the most part, in most of Illinois. Rainfall in March now is pretty wide gradient across the state. There haven't been much here in eastern Illinois, but western Illinois and northwestern Illinois have seen twice their normal precip for March so far up to date. And it looks like we're going to be on the wet side for March if these next couple of systems produce as much precip as they might. So the ground's still damp, and we need a period of dry, warm weather to probably dry things out. So it'll be a couple weeks yet before we can probably say too much for sure.
And when do you folks start really taking soil temperatures and watching those as the warm-up comes?
Well, I mean, we're always taking... We measure soil temperature constantly, but usually by the end of March, early April, we'll start seeing temperatures make a significant rise. We did have snow cover much of the winter, so that tends to damper the cold going into the ground. I mean, it was frozen, and we'll see temperatures slowly coming up. But once we get consistently warm for a while and the nights are warm, we'll see temperatures starting to rise more rapidly.
Thanks much, Steve.
Okay, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.